For back then, wearing a wire is not good. Now I can do that. But my name is Will, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 4th, 2021. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I get the opportunity of sponsoring other people, and I'm just super blessed. You know, it is intimidating, right? Like, I come here, and everywhere I sit, there's like 900 years of sobriety sitting within, like, you know, like, everybody got sober, you know, before I was born, but that's okay. You know, but I'm grateful for that, right? Because today I can sit here and I can listen, and I can, like, I always try to remain in the state of, like, being teachable. You know, I was always taught that from the very beginning. Like, I can just learn so much. And, you know, this weekend has been amazing. I want to start with thanking, you know, Adam, Karen, and the rest of the committee, and anybody who had hands in this, like, to make this possible. You know, y'all have been real good to us, so I appreciate that. You know, like, last night I was sitting there and just, like, this... immense, like, sense of gratitude of, like, you know, there was a point in time where I was not welcome, you know, places, and, like, to get the opportunity to be invited somewhere, I've never, failed to take that for granted. But that being said, I was born, in Charlotte, North Carolina. My dad's an alcoholic. He's been in and out of the rooms my entire life. So, like, I was like that little kid running around at meetings, just like had no idea what was going on. But I always remember being like super excited. There was like this one meeting where they would give out like butterscotch candies, and I was just super stoked to be there, you know. And I just like had no clue, you know. So I always have like a special place in my heart for like when I see those little kids running around, you know. That was me. So. My parents got divorced when I was real little. You know, we moved in with my dad just because he made more money, so it made more sense. And so we moved to Nashville, Tennessee for like 9 months. And this was just a super weird time in my life. Like, my dad's drinking, it got real bad. And, you know, I will say this, like, you know, I hear people say all the time, like, I was born with this disease. Maybe, you know, I do remember from the earliest of ages, you know, always looking for some external solution for the way that I felt inside. You know, whether that's like a new pair of shoes or your validation or, you know, if I just get this amount of money or whatever the case may be, like, I was always, like, if I had your life, then I would feel better. I do remember that, like, from the very earliest of times. And, we moved to Tennessee, and then one day my dad sat us down and was like, hey, we're going to move back to Charlotte, so we'll be closer to family. So we moved to Charlotte, and moved in with my mom's mom, which is a little strange when I think about it now. It's like me and my dad and my brother moving with my mom's mom. But at the time I was like, you know, moving in with Nana. Sick. So that's what we did. You know, so I moved in with her. And you know, I had a pretty normal childhood, I would say. You know, you had asked me 2.5 years ago, I told you that I really came from rags to riches. But I've grown to realize that, like, I really never, needed for anything. You know, like, I hear people all the time, or, like, I used to say all the time that it's just like this dysfunctional family, but, like, I've yet to find, like, a functional family. Like, you show me what that looks like. So I don't know, man. Like, I always had food on the table. I always, like, had new clothes to go back to school. I always was fed. You know, I really, really never needed for anything. Yes, we had problems, but, you know, who doesn't? And today I'm able to realize that. Back then I was not. But, so I played baseball when I was real little. Love that. So what would happen was, is when we moved to Charlotte, my dad would meet a girl. We'd move in with her. They'd break up. We'd move back in with Nana. And this happened, twice, right? And then he met this really great woman, to be honest, like super healthy. And, you know, we did things like had dinner together, you know, and like had chores and stuff. We had to like do our homework, which was foreign. You know, so as a 11-year-old and 14-year-old, right? So periodically we're going back and forth and meeting with mom, right? She lives in Atlanta. She's a bartender. I love that woman more than any human that walks this earth by long stretch. However, she's always been more than a friend, than a mom, right? So me and my brother were periodically going back and visiting her, and you know, she's a bartender. You know, she works all night, sleeps all day, kind of lets us do whatever we want at that period of time. So as an 11 and 14-year-old, we sat down had a group conscience, right? And we're like, let's weigh this out, right? We can do whatever we want, or like homework, you know? So we did. We packed up our stuff. We were like, hey, Dad, we want to move in with Mom. So we did, you know, we packed it up, and we moved in with my mom. And the way that my mom's house was set up, right? So like I said, my mom's a bartender. She worked all day and she worked all night and slept most of the day. She had moved in with this man that she met at the bar, you know, he worked all day and went to the bar all night. So what that did was it set up this perfect environment, right, where nobody was ever there, and it became the party house for the entire city of Atlanta. So at this point in time, I'm playing baseball, and I would come home from baseball practice, and there would be like 48 kids at my house, and like kids having sex in my bed, and doing like every drug under the sun, and just like not a conducive environment for a 12-year-old, you know, so... At this point, I remember I was just like this super sensitive kid, and like I just hated drugs and alcohol, because I was seeing what it was doing to my brother, and I just like resented it so much. And like, you know, because you ask an 11-year-old, would you rather be able to do whatever you want, or would you rather have structure? And they're gonna tell you that they want to do whatever they want. But I really think that deep down in every child, like, they need to be told what to do. You know, they need to be told, like, hey, you've got to clean your room. You've got to go to sleep. You've got to brush your teeth. You've got to do your laundry. Like, these are all things that, like, I just wasn't learning how to do. You know, and it was just chaos, kinda. So, naturally, you hang around the barbershop long enough, you're gonna get a haircut. And I started to look up to all my brother's friends. I mean, I thought that they were just, like, the coolest thing ever, you know, to come to this earth. And, you know, eventually I started to partake, you know, and I remember in eighth grade, I was like in little Five Points with like me, my brother and his friends. And, they were passing around this little outside issue. And I took it of it. Right. And I remember I also, like I said, like I really needed your validation. I really did. And I didn't, I barely hit it totally wrong and just like acted like I was super stoned, you know? And I like hopped around the streets of Little Five Points and we went to Little Five Pizza and I just like acted like it was just so good because I knew that like that's what you're supposed to do. Needless to say, I ended up doing it again. And I had like, you know, my first spiritual experience, if you will. I had really, you know, I had found it, you know. You know, it was like, I always had to be this like center of attention. I was like this little flipping riddling boy. Thank you so much. I was always this like little riddling boy, like, and I just had to have everybody looking at me and all of a sudden, like, I didn't have to have that. You know, it was like, I didn't really care what you thought anymore. I didn't really, it was just, I had arrived, you know? So from that moment forward, it was my life's mission to do that every single day. And my main purpose in life was to put my hands on whatever the next substance was that was going to take me outside of me. And I did that every day. You know, I went to this high school, it's called Grady High School. My brother was a senior and I was a freshman. And he was like, this is how we do things. You know, these are the gates that we get out of. These are where we can skip school and get messed up. And, you know, so there are a lot of drugs in my story. So I will try to my utmost ability to like remain to the singleness of purpose. But, you know, so I made it my entire identity. You know, I dove in head first. Like I was like that kid that would like walk around school with like Huff socks, like the weed socks and like Grateful Dead shirts. And I just like, I couldn't tell you four Grateful Dead songs if you like held a gun to my head, you know, but like I really wanted you to like me, you know, that's just what it was. So I don't know, man, along the way, I like picked up a few hostages, right? Like I had a girlfriend, that poor girl, you know, like I just drug her through the mud because like, at this point in time, like, I didn't have the capability to love anything or anybody other than myself and other than drugs and alcohol. Like, I just didn't. I didn't know how to do that. I was never shown how to do that. And at this point in time, like, I'm just, like, I'm in the full-blown, just, all I cared about was, like, just getting drunk and doing other things. So I somehow graduated high school, you know, I really don't know how. I just, Grady was one of those places that you could go to and you could kind of just do whatever you wanted. And then the last day you could go to your teachers and say, hey, what can I do? And they'll give you like three assignments and you could pass basically. So that's what I did, you know, and I got into college, right? And my brother didn't graduate high school and my brother didn't go to college. So in my head, I'm like, man, this is sick. You know, I must not be that bad, you know? Meanwhile, I go to Kennesaw State right out of high school. I don't remember my move-in date. My mom is having to like make my bed and carry me up the stairs. And it's just so, so sad. Like I should not have gone right out of high school, but I did, you know, and I'll never forget, like, I come home like 2 weeks into the first semester. My roommates are sitting in there and I come in, I see them sitting there. I'm like, hey, my name's Will. Nice to meet you. And they're like, we've met you already, you know, and I'm like, sick, you know, like this is how this relationship is going to go, you know, and sadly enough, right, like that relationship ended with me taking all of his stuff, dude. Like I stole every single one of that man's watches. I was stealing this, like the headsets for his Xbox. I mean, it was really, really bad. Like at this point, I was really, 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 not doing well. I'll never forget this. That first semester, I went home for Christmas, and of course, my brother made me mad, right? So I stole his debit, naturally, right? I stole his debit card and went to the ATM and pulled out as much money as possible, snapped the debit card in half, threw it down the sewer, and then like about 20 minutes later, my mom comes in and is like, hey, you know, your brother just called me and said, that there's been money taken out of this ATM. Was that you? And I'm like, no, you know, no. You know, and then I finally confessed to it, right? And so my dad calls me, and like I said, he's been in and out of the rooms, you know, my whole life. So he calls me, and he was like, hey, did you take this money? And of course, I denied it, but I eventually fessed up to it. And he was like, did you take this money for drugs and alcohol? And I was like, no, you know. And he was like, well, what did you take it for? You know, and I just made up some BS excuse about like why I needed it, you know, like I needed a new pair of shoes and or something. And he was like, he was like, so there's two ways we can go about this, right? One is that you're sick, and that there's a reason that you're doing this and we can get you help. The other is that you're just an asshole, right? Like you just like want new pair of shoes and, you know, you're just like doing this just because. So he was like, why don't we take you out of school? And I'll put you in treatment. We can get you help. And of course I just lost it. You know, at this point, like I'm 6'3". I weigh 158 pounds soaking wet. I have sores all in my mouth. I have track marks all over my arm, but I'm like, rehab, you know, with those people, you know, are you kidding me? You know, it's amazing how you can be in that state and still think that you have some form of control over this thing, right? Like, I'm gonna get it together if I can just, like, it's just this and this, that's the problem, right? If I can just learn to smoke this, and drink like a normal person, like, then my life would be okay. And it took me years, to realize that I had absolutely nothing to do with the alcohol. And that's just a symptom of the problem. But I didn't understand that, you know, like, so I manipulated my parents into letting me go back to school because, like, God forbid everybody around me knows that I dropped out of high school. Like, I was going to class anyways, you know, so it was like, I ended up going back, and by February, I'm failing all my classes again. One of my very, very, very best friends, died of an overdose, and he was like a super smart kid and like got into all these colleges and was like teaching English beyond borders before his first semester at NYU. Just like super smart kid. And, you know, we like to mess around, like, you know, get drunk together. And, you know, he was like in his last country, Ghana. And, went in to like go pick up some outside issues and, you know, didn't wake up the next morning, you know, and I didn't know how to take that, right? Like, I'm so neck deep in this. Like, I don't know how to deal with anything properly, but, So not far long, I'm failing all my classes. I pull back out. I somehow manipulate my mom into letting me live back at home. So I get my job back at like some dive bar called Moe's and Joe's in Virginia Highlands. If anybody knows anything about that area, it's just not a conducive environment for an 18-year-old drug addict. But so I do that. Like 4 months later, or not even that long, probably like a month and a half, 2 months later, I beg to leave that job. That's a job that they're not going to really fire you, but I like beg to leave. Went on a really not good bender. One day my mom calls my brother over because he had gotten sober at this point. And they were like, okay, we'll take you to Ridgeview. And I pull up to the Ridgeview lobby. They told my mom that I had to have $1,000 to check me in. My mom's like, I don't have $1,000, you know? So we went back home. I did a bunch of messed up stuff that night. And then, the next day my dad found this place called Twin Lakes in Monroe, Georgia. And in April 2018, I checked into Twin Lakes. You know, and I loved it. Like, I loved it. I was truly riding this, like, pink cloud, you know, if you will, and I just loved it. Like, I hadn't been sober since I was 13 years old. Like, I finally felt like I was a part of something. I felt good physically. And I just don't think, like, 18-year-old me, didn't understand the gravity of alcoholism. You know, like, it was like, if I started to feel good physically, you know, they were like, you should go to sober living. And I was like, okay, I'll go to sober living as long as it's in Atlanta, right? And they're like, no, you know? So I was like, okay, fine. I'll go to sober living as long as it's on the beach, right? Sounds like a pretty good deal to me, you know? So I did. So I went to Charleston, South Carolina, and I was at this sweet sober living, like, and I got this job waiting tables on Folly Beach, and I started making all this money, and all of a sudden, I didn't need AA anymore, you know, because like I had all these things, right? Like I have money in my pocket. My family likes me again, you know? So like, what's a drink on 4th of July? You know, like everybody drinks, you know? I just didn't understand that like I had this thing. You know, and this started this cycle of treatment, sober living, relapse. Treatment, sober living, relapse. And dude, this went on for like, till this last time I got sober. You know, and I can go on and on. I mean, it led to homelessness. There was a point in time where I was sleeping on a mat inside of the Salvation Army homeless shelter. Like, I could not stop. Overdoses, all the things, right, that go along with it. You know, because eventually all that support that I had for my family, they're like, good luck, you know, I've had enough, you know. And I remember I got back into Twin Lakes, like a second time after a whole bunch of other places and, met a girl, you know, cause that's my, I said it yesterday, that's my favorite pastime is going to rehab and falling in love, you know. You know, it really is. Like, I'm like, you have an apartment, right? You have a car. What are we doing here? You know, like this is ridiculous, you know, the solution is out there, right? I don't know what we're doing in here. So I did that twice, you know, both times moved in with them. It was just a whole mess, but, so I did that until this last time, you know, I had met a girl in Twin Lakes, and I dated her for 2 years. And it was a pretty toxic relationship, to say the least, but, you know, towards the end of that relationship, I like made up this excuse about why we weren't working out, right? But really, I just wanted to go home and use and get drunk without anybody on my back. And you know, I had reached more physical bottoms, than this one. You know, like I said, I was literally sleeping on a mat in a Salvation Army homeless shelter in California because moving 2,500 miles away is going to solve my problem. You know, but like I had nothing, right? This time, like I woke up every single day and I wanted to blow my head off. You know, like I had been running in this hamster wheel of a life and I was just running. And I wasn't getting anywhere. You know, and that's exhausting. Like it's like that line of like, you know, you'll know loneliness like few people do. And I don't relate to anything more. You know, just like sitting in my room, like just done, you know? So this girl, scooped me up, and was like, I'm putting you on a plane, and I'm taking you to South Bend, Indiana, to go kick on my friend's couch. She's going to Notre Dame. And it was the best thing that she, with misgiving, right? Because of course I'm like, I had no intention of getting sober. And that was February 4th, 2021. I had no intention of getting sober that day. None. Like I had plans to go to the bar that night. And my mom was basically like, you're getting on this plane or you're getting out of here, right? And I had done the homeless route before and I did not want to do that again. So I was like, okay. So we went. And I got on my meeting guide app, right? And I looked up this meeting downtown South Bend, Indiana, and it was me and this one guy, dude. And we'd sit there and we'd make like a pot of coffee and we'd sit there and we'd talk about God for an hour. And it was like the best thing ever. It was just like, I don't have this guy's number anymore. I wish that I did and I hope that he's doing the best because like, that guy like saved my life. Truly, because if he wouldn't have been there, who knows, man, but like, for like 2 weeks straight, me and this guy just like talked about his kids, and just like his journey through life, and it was incredible, you know. I used to have a lot of people ask me like, you know, what's different this time? What's different this time? And I hated that question, dude. I hated it more than anything in the world because I was like, I don't know, man. I wanted to get sober just as bad this time as I did the first 962 times to try to get sober. I don't know, you know, but today I can answer that question, right? And I think that I had truly gotten my ass whooped enough to where I was willing to listen to somebody other than myself, you know, because like I spent a lot of time in AA meetings and in treatment centers to where I had memorized enough BS where I could come and regurgitate a bunch of bull and make it sound like I knew what I was talking about. And then I would go home to my sober living wanting to die, you know, and wondering why I kept getting hot, kept getting drunk, kept using, you know. And I finally was willing enough to let go, you know, and just like the best thing that I could have ever done for myself was to tell myself I have no clue. I have no clue. And the beautiful thing is 2.5 years later, I still have no clue. You know, like I still have no clue. You know, like I said in the beginning, like I have to remain in this state of like being teachable. Cause I spent a lot of time thinking that I knew everything, you know, and it's really, really hard to get sober when you're unteachable. You know, like I would come in and like I said, dude, I would do that 1, 2, 3 tango, dude. Like I would come in and I would read steps 1, 2, and 3. I say read because I didn't really work them, but I would read steps 1, 2, and 3 with a sponsor. They would let go of my hand and tell me to do an inventory. I would go back to my sober living. I would kick my feet up on the desk and I would eat Doritos and I would play Xbox and I would wonder why I feel like, right? And I have this disease that screams for solution. And it's gonna get treated, right? Whether or not that's through a spiritual solution or that's through drugs and alcohol, but I promise you that hole is gonna get filled. I have to watch out for that all the time, even in sobriety, right? Like, I can fill it up, you know, with a lot of things other than God. And I have to be real careful of that because if I get disconnected, then I start harming other people. And I start doing things that are way not in God's will. So I have to, that's why I have to do this on a daily basis. So that was the difference, right? So I was still living with her, at her house in Buford, Georgia. And I would go to this meeting called Serenity House. And I went in and the first guy that shared about him answering the phone to his sponsees, I was like, that guy's sponsoring somebody, help me, you know? And he did, dude. He told me to do like 4 or 5 things, right? And it was like, go home, read the doctor's opinion, pray twice a day, no matter like if you believe or not. Whether that's like, God, please help me stay sober today. And then at the end of the day, thank you for helping me stay sober. Get a service commitment, call him every day and call his sponsor every day, which was new, but I like that. I did for the first time in my life. I did, because that first step took me 4 years to do, because it tells me that I have to be convinced, you know, I have to be convinced to my innermost self that I cannot successfully use drugs and alcohol. And I just wasn't, You know, I wasn't convinced. Like, it says, like, this idea that we are or presently may be has to be smashed. We're like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. I had to do some smashing, you know, unfortunately. And, like, thank God that I didn't die along the way. And then finally, I was able to put my ego to the side long enough for something to happen, for God to fit in. You know, because, like, I was so involved in myself that, like, there was no room for any solution in my life, especially, like, because I just wouldn't let anybody help me. You know, because I have all the answers, dude. So I finally worked the first step, you know, thank God. You know, steps two and three, like, you know, I had always had this conception of some power that's greater than me. I wasn't opposed to it. That wasn't really something that was too hard for me. That wasn't something that was too hard for me. So I worked and I got on my knees with this dude, and did an honest, like, third step, right? And I still have to do that on a daily basis. And then there's this funny thing, right? This little sentence, that's after this, right? And it says that, like, next we launched on a course of vigorous action. I don't know if the first time, first 96 times I tried to get sober, I just missed that, you know? But like I said, that was another thing that was different is I never once launched on a course of vigorous action, you know? Like, I was gonna do it on my terms, you know? It was my time, you know? I have better things to do, you know, than this. But this time I got to work, you know? And I went home and I wrote and wrote and wrote like my life depended on it. Because it does, you know, but I never understood that. Like, I never understood that if I don't do this work, I'm going to die. And today, like, I'm convinced that if I don't do this, then I'm going to die. You know, so, through that, I got this long list of character defects, right? Like, I hear all the time people have this experience, this, like, fifth step experience, you know, where they left the fifth step room and they just felt like they're floating on air. You know, if you had that, then, you know, because I didn't, you know, I did not, you know, the first time I left that room and I was like, wow, you know, I have a lot of stuff to work on, you know, and I have this list, like, on paper in front of me of, like, all these ways that I destroy my life sober, you know, without alcohol and without drugs. And it has nothing to do with drugs and alcohol, right? And it just took me so long to realize that, right? Like, 'cause if it had anything to do with the drugs and alcohol, I would have just checked into detox in 2018, got the drugs and alcohol flushed out of my system, and then I just wouldn't have drank again, you know? You know? But it's so, like, through this, like, I have this list of ways that, like, that I can improve. You know, and like 2.5 years ago, man, like, I didn't care if I was dishonest. You know, like, I didn't care if I was manipulative. I didn't care if I, like, was being selfish. I didn't care. Like, I didn't care, you know, and like, today I care about those things, which is cool to me. You know, like, it's cool, like, how I have this foundation to where, like, I can be a useful citizen and be a useful family member and be a useful, like I can show up today. And this gives me this outline of, like, how I can improve. You know, and like, God, the alcoholic in me, like, I wanted to be able to just go home and say the 7-step prayer and just, like, gone, you know, like, now I'm just walking on the flipping broad highway of the spirit, you know, and that's just not it, right? And to me, like, this step is all about, like, self-awareness, you know, and like, how are these defects cropping up in my life today? And like, how can I improve? You know, like, there are some that still put me in really bad situations. And I wish that I could say that I do this perfectly, and I just don't, you know, like, there are some things in my life that still crop up. But today I have, like, this program of action that shows me, like, if I make harm, then I go make it right, you know, and like, how can I be a better human being? And like, what a beautiful thing that we have, you know, like, this is not just an alcoholic thing, right? Like, we can use this in everything, you know, which is awesome, you know? So I did that. I say that I didn't get that feeling that I was looking for and five, I found an 8 and 9. I really, really did. Like, all those promises really started to come true in my life. Like, I will never forget, I drove to North Carolina, to go make amends with my dad. You know, and this was a relationship that was not good. I said a lot of things back then, and I did a lot of things back then, and he did as well, but this is not about him, right? Like, I was not a good son, you know, and I was able to drive up there and, like, make amends with him and his wife, and, like, I'll never forget, I was on the way back, you know, and, like, I had this, the most profound spiritual experience I've ever had in my whole life. Like, I remember calling my sponsor, and I was like, y'all are really on to something here, you know, like, y'all are really on to something here, you know, and it was just like, I noticed, like, all these things coming true in my life, man. Like, I was like, I haven't thought about getting drunk in, like, a week, you know, and, like, for someone like me, like, that's a long time, dude. That's a long time for someone like me to, like, not think about that, you know, and it would just, like, slowly gradually get larger, and, like, time would go in between, and I was just, like, I had this feeling of peace and serenity that I had never known, and, like, I had, this fear of people was slipping away. Like, I was able to look people in the eye, you know, I was able to go home at night and realize I don't owe anybody any money anymore, you know, and for someone like me, that's huge, dude. I used to call everybody and their mother with some crazy sob story about why I needed 50 bucks, you know, because I was, like, late on my phone bill, or la da 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 da, you know, this, that, and third. Like, I owed everybody money, man. You know, that ex-girlfriend that picked me up, she met me in rehab, right? I don't have any money. She had quite a bit of money. And I got sober this time, and my sponsor was like, you're gonna pay that back, you know? So we sat down, and I owed her more money than I had ever seen it sitting in my bank account ever, you know? So at the time, it might as well have been 600 grand, you know? I mean, it was just an unattainable number. You know, but then, you know, $350 at a time, $200 at a time, like, I slowly chipped away. You know, and today I can go to bed tonight knowing that I don't owe anybody any money. And for me, that's huge, you know. You know, I owed everybody money, dude. So, like, today, like, that step allows me to sleep at night, you know, knowing that, like not looking over my shoulder, dude. Because, dude, yeah, I lost a lot of hours of sleep over the things that I had done to people, you know, and to make all that stuff right, is just an incredible experience. So 10 and 11 is fantastic. I love them, right? I don't do them perfectly. I just don't, you know. I try to do my inventory every night. Do I do it 100% of the time? No. You know, I wish I could sit up here and say that I do. But I do my best, right? And when I don't do it, I absolutely feel it, you know, and so, like, to me, these steps are like these checks and balances, you know, it's like, how are these things cropping up in my life today? I have new resentments, I have new fears, I have new, you know, things that I need to look at, you know, and if I don't, then I'll get drunk, you know, and I believe that, and like a lot happens before that, right? It's like I start lying to people, or I start, you know, making harm to other people, causing harm on other people, and like I have to be able to, like, see that on paper and know where I'm going wrong. I too love the 11th step. You know, I've gotten real into, like, breath work and, like, all this stuff, you know, and I just love it. Like, you know, I always lived life on the edge of my seat, you know, like I was just looking, like I said in the beginning, I was just looking for this thing, that this next thing that was going to make me happy. And step 11, like, allows me to realize that, like, I have it. You know, I have that thing, inside me, and it's everywhere, you know, and all I have to do is just, like, sit quietly, and breathe. And I was never able to do that. You know, I was never able to do that. And today, and all it takes is, like, 15 minutes in the morning, you know, is just, like, sitting quietly. You know, it's like these little things that keep me sober. You know, and so I'll get to it in a minute, but, like, step 12 is where the money's at. Like, that's it. You know, it's like sitting at a table across from another alcoholic reading the book, you know, and just like watching light turn on in people's eyes. There's nothing better. Like, there is nothing better from that moment where it clicks and they're like, oh, like, I like it. And there's just, I'm telling you, it gives me chills. Like, I just love it so much. You know, so today, I work at a treatment center. The treatment center that I checked into 3 times as a client. And it's the best, dude. Like I was a tech for a little over a year. And it was just like the greatest job ever. You know, like I got to sit at the front and just read the big books, like 30 people at a time, you know, and it's just, I just love it. Like I love seeing people come in on the worst day of their life. And then 30 days later they check out and they have spark in their eye again and they have this fire under their butt for life. You know, there's God in that building, you know, as much as people don't want to see it, when they're there, but there is, you know, like there's miracles being worked in that building. You know, and I just have the most immense amount of passion for that stuff. You know, because it saved my life, you know, like, and I'll sit up there and I scream, like the big book at people and everybody's like, man, you're like, you get so fired up, you know, and I'm like, yeah, because like it gave me everything in my life today. You know, everything that I have in my life today is due to this program. You know, so I'm just super grateful for that experience. You know, on the weekends I work at a restaurant, you know, and I serve alcohol, you know, but like today, like it doesn't like I have to, you know, I'm only there Friday and Saturday and I make sure that I surround my days with recovery. You know, and it just doesn't have a pool. I mean, it's good money. So it's temporary, but, today, like I have, like genuine relationships with the people around me. You know, and that's something that I never used to have, right? Like you were only in my life if I could get something from you. And when that ran out, I was on to the next, you know, like this program taught me how to treat you. You know, this program taught me how to treat myself. This program taught me how to love people. Like I said, when I was a kid, man, like I wasn't really being taught any of this stuff. And like y'all are teaching me how to do that. Like I'm growing up in this program. You know, and I'm so, so, so grateful for that. You know, like today I have like all this stuff, you know, like I have my own apartment, which is cool. And I know that's like monetary stuff, but like, you know, that's big for me, right? Like when I was a kid, like it was constantly, I was living in other people's houses. Like it was like my dad would move in with these girls or I was living like my mom, when I moved back in with my mom, like she was with this other dude and this was his house. So from the time I was 6 years old, it was like, this is not your house, right? So like, behave accordingly, you know, and I would come home in high school and we would get kicked out and I would be couch surfing and la-da-da-da, you know, all this stuff, right? And like, I'll never forget, I got this apartment, right? And I have a TV on the ground and nothing else, you know, and I'm just sitting there just like bawling, crying, you know, because like, this is mine, right? Like, I can go home tonight and like sleep in my bed, that's clean, you know, and just like, I have a closet full of clean clothes, you know, and if anybody's been homeless before, you can appreciate like clean socks, and stuff like that, you know, it's like, those little things, you know, like I have a clean car that I get to go home that has my name on it, that I have a valid driver's license in my pocket, you know, and just like all these things, you know, like, that I never used to have, you know, and I wouldn't have ever had it, if it wasn't for this program. And, like I said, man, I'm forever indebted to this program. You know, everything that I have in my life today is due to y'all. And I will never even come close to paying that back. But I will die trying, right? And what that looks like for me is that means showing up to meetings. You know, that means grabbing the newcomer and being like, hey man, here's the coffee, right? Like, why are you here? Let's go grab some lunch, right? Like, those were things that saved my life. You know, it was like some kid who had nothing, expecting nothing in return, right? So come and pick me up and buy me lunch. You know, I didn't have anything. You know, so today I show up for people, you know, and I just tried to do what that dude did for me. Because if it wasn't for that, I'd be dead, you know? So it is my responsibility to show up, you know, for things like this and for things just like anything that I can do to possibly try to give a little bit back. It is my responsibility to do that. You know, and that stuff keeps me sober, man. Service keeps me sober. You know, taking suggestions keeps me sober. That's pretty much what my sobriety consists of, right? Is like just listening to somebody other than me. You know, it's like I'll do something, I'll call, I ask for suggestions. I call like four people and I usually don't do it, you know? And then I suffer and then I do it and I feel better immediately, you know? And that's basically what it is, you know? And it's like, and that's what it started with, is just like, I threw it in my hands and I let somebody else help me. And you know, I stopped listening to me and I just started listening to y'all. You know, so I am eternally grateful, for these rooms, and just for this opportunity and, you know, just being sober today. It's the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And I'll just continue to take suggestions, people like y'all who have a million and one years sober, you know, and I appreciate y'all letting me sit up here and talk about my favorite topic in the world, which is me, you know. So that's all I got.